jungle. We've got fun and games. We got everything you want, honey. We know the name.
And the A's that were coming to Big Thunder.
Yeah.
And get trained on Thunder, and there was only a few of them.
Yeah, because it was still jungle. Was still, I think you're definitely going to have to, we're going to have to squeeze you in. Cause
I think
you
West
have a
Side
soft,
West Side was mostly, man.
And you're going to be soft, you're going to be soft too at that level. Okay. So we'll just squeeze
it in. And also, Submarine Boys was also men too.
Men, yeah. Because they didn't have the guys on Storybook either.
No, yeah. They did not.
No, you were part
I was,
of that experiment.
I was actually the sixth guy to work Storybook. I don't know if that means anything.
Because all the hot chicks were over on Storybooks.
Yeah, I was happy to be there.
All the hot, ridiculously young, just to remind you about that.
Which is
just fine.
What we were after at the time.
Well, we'll roll that first 20 seconds. And welcome everyone to Tales from the Jungle Cruise Season 2, Episode 3. I'm standing here today chatting with Jacob Caputo and Scott Kelly and a mystery person who is going to remain in the background, muffled with his sonogram voice. Echo thing that makes him sound like Ivan Drago. Skipper Kyle, as everyone knows, I've done a few of these now. The interesting thing about the mix tonight, Jacob, you were there, what were your years?
I started working jungle in 1999.
Okay.
And I left to go into management in 2004.
Okay. And then you were, before that, you were 87, Scott?
87 through 93. Was okay. Basically my era.
So you had a 6-year run. I had a 6-year run. You had a 4-year run, 4 or 5-year run.
About 5-year run, yeah. Attractions, yeah.
And it's interesting how we seem to have either people who've been with the park for a year, or 5 years, or 10 years. And here's my theory: people stay in the length it will take to get a pin on their name badge. That's the only reason people stay those lengths, is they want to get the little Mickey or Donald or whatever Pluto pin on their name badge for that length of service. So. And so just to run the quick things we usually do, Jacob, you were Storybook. Oh, we know that one from experience. Jungle, where else did you work?
I worked Mansion for a while. I worked Star Tours, and I think that's it.
That's fair. And Scott, I know.
Oh, Steam Trains. I worked Steam Trains as well.
And Scott, you were Columbia?
I got all over the place. I was Jungle Cruise, Tiki Room, Treehouse, Mark Twain, Columbia, Big Thunder, Matterhorn, parking lot, mansion, and then I also got cross trained on rafts and keelboats, but I never got to actually really work a bunch of shifts out there on those.
Yeah.
But that was kind of the main.
So pretty much on the west side of the park, you had
all west side, and then Matterhorn, which was pretty fun.
Yeah, Matterhorn's getting the big. It'll be reopening next week, 3 weeks from now. So yeah, Matterhorn got its big. It's funny. Didn't they redo it all in sections? That was the big thing. They were doing it in eighths or sixth, because the way they couldn't take it all down because the weight of what was there was supporting the lagoon structurally. No, is that just a myth? Oh darn! I thought that would be a good myth. Or was it that if they took all the water out of the lagoon, the Matterhorn would fall in? No, that's a myth too. I just want to see how long our mystery guest can shake his head up and down or. So that era-wise, we kind of have a fun spread. So you were a jungle before women.
Before women, so no girls, and with we all had guns.
You had guns, yeah. We had that 6-year period with no guns.
I started with guns, took the guns away, and then guns came back. So I
you
spanned
bridged,
that.
You
yeah.
Bridged the entire. There was something fun about the air horns and the spitwad days. People would take paper towels and moisten them, and would be able to shoot them halfway across the lagoon at each other. Or they would flip them upside down and use the cold propellant that was in there and give each other little cold squirts on the ass. Those were the days. Very Disney appropriate. So in the 80s, you were kind of in that no man's land where the park management and all that really hadn't come together under the Eisner deal. It was pre-Little Mermaid. So what was... yes, we can all kill our phones now. I'll remember to turn mine into airplane mode, too, for once. So what was the theme of the park? Because at that point, it was obviously, you still had parking lots. That was exciting.
Parking lot was actually pretty fun back in the day, because you worked like gangbusters for about 3 hours, and then once kind of the morning rush was done, you...
Sat around.
Yeah, sat around and got to chat quite a bit. So it was actually kind of fun working parking lot. And then you also got to work the kennel. Mm-hmm. I got shipped in kennel, so that was, if you grab a buck and you were there for 8 hours, it was pretty slow going.
That's because, yeah, kennel is now trained on its own kind of a beast, isn't it? I thought kennel was off on its own, like, devoted cast members. We'll scratch our chins about that one and ask that. None of us have had, you know, kennel knowledge.
I didn't even know that it was still around.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, it's the kennel. We get you get iguanas in there. You get, I mean, just a gambit of animals that would come through there.
Did you ever have a monkey?
No spider monkeys.
No spider monkeys. No bubbles wouldn't hang out while
no,
Michael's
no
in the
bubbles.
Park.
Although I did have Michael on my boat one day. That was one of my favorite stories, Jungle Cruise stories of all time.
All right. Well, we'll get around to that in the celebrity edition part of the program about our fun celebrity times. So, but no, that was the 80s. I mean, the late 80s was pre-Little Mermaid. It was, as I give James Greathouse a hell of a time, me still in high school. But yeah, no, it was, I mean, park repair was at an all-time low. I mean, it really, the least amount of money going into per capita as far as maintenance and staffing and all the hours was late 80s, according to people I've talked to. What was it for you? What first of all, what drew you to the park for working there?
At the time, I was just kind of going to college, and it seemed like a pretty fun thing to do. And when I went in there, I actually had an idea of, I said, I want to work Jungle Cruise. That sounds like it'd be a good time. Mm-hmm. So I did my interview. I said, hey, I want to work some Jungle Cruise. Guy says, all right. And so hired me. And have you had Trev Finney on your program yet?
No.
Trev gave me my tour. And Jim Mathis. Jim Mathis.
I know Jim hasn't. I've talked to him. I think I've talked to him about being on the show.
There's a pretty creative guy. He was my Jungle Cruise trainer. So he was quite a character to have as your first trainer at Disney.
Yeah. I mean, did you see over the span from when you got trained to when you eventually left? I mean, with that range, I mean, that's when the park started going through its heyday again.
You know, it. I was very fortunate because the time that I was there, when I hired in, I think I was 19, and I was one of the younger ride operators at the time. You know, Jungle Cruise, all that was kind of the mid-20s, late 20s.
Sure.
And so I was kind of the young guy, and I actually watched the thing transition to when I left, Disney was kind of aiming, they wanted more the college years kids. Were no benefits.
Yeah, they wouldn't
and,
stay long enough to get benefits or
correct.
Longer term pay.
But the knowledge of the park, when I first hired in, I mean, the knowledge on every ride was awesome. And so you didn't really have the problems that you have today with a lot of the younger kids. Because it just, they don't have the knowledge that, you know, because you had to work a ride for 2 years before you even got considered to be a trainer. Then when you're a trainer, you were a trainer for, you know, a year or two. And then if you were, you know, good enough, then they moved you to, you know, like Tiki Room as a lead, and then you had to kind of prove that you could manage two or three people before they'd start moving you around to rides that actually had, you know, Jungle Cruise, Big Thunder.
Some level of
responsibility. I saw that the end of that, and, it, you know, there were, when I first got there, there were a lot of the old school guys that were, 30s and 40s that, man, they knew everything, and they started going away, and it was kind of sad because they brought in the punk college kids that just didn't care. I mean, that was at least what I saw.
I was actually right at the end. I guess I was a couple weeks late of getting a locker. That was still an option when
I had a locker.
I actually kind of tried to strong arm to try to get into one because it was when I moved over from California Adventure to Disneyland. There actually were available, and they were just starting to discontinue it. I remember Paul Horn thumbing his nose up at me and laughing because he had one I didn't. But, I mean, that was that transition time where costumes were, at that point, you would wear them for the day and turn them back in, or you'd leave them in your locker. You know, it was before they actually let you take the costumes out onto the street, which still to this day is one of my pet peeves. When I see someone in costume on a bus or walking down Catella or whatever it is, or half and half, where they're wearing their jeans with the top of a jungle costume or whatever it is, I think that's where the magic gets lost a little bit in the need to have the cost control of us washing our own clothes.
Yeah, you know, there were fun things about that that I'll never forget. There were times in the summer where I simply couldn't get over to costuming. You probably remember this, to get a new costume. And you'd open the locker, and you'd take a step back because it would smell awful. And I'd start thinking to myself, can I make it another day wearing this costume, or do I have to go turn it in? And chances are I wasn't married back then, so I'd do it. I'd wear it again, put a little more deodorant, a little bit more cologne on. And
this is why attendance was so
high. Yeah, that might have been.
Issues maybe were related to the costuming and personal hygiene issues.
Possibly. I never once had a leader or anybody tell me that I smelled, needed to go back, but... I wondered, you know.
Well, if you work jungle, that's pretty easy to mask your personal odor with the
Every smells
methane.
Over there. Yeah, so every smells.
Was I've talked to some other skippers from the late 80s in that era. I guess the dyes that were used in the water weren't quite as pervasive back then. It wasn't quite as dark of a chemical green.
No, but it was pretty funny. We'd as a new jungle lead, I come walking up, you know, as a opening lead for a couple summers, and there's a guy in, you know, full rubber suit with a mask, he's dumping the stuff, the chemicals
into the
hazmat suit.
The guys from Monsters Incorporated, the yellow things.
It was
for
hysterical,
kids.
And I look at the guy, and it's got, you know, the warning signs on the label. I go, really, is this stuff really that dangerous? And he goes, dude, never get in the water here or rivers of America. So you didn't see me in the water, you know, people jumping in the water every once in a while. That was some wacky stuff.
I got a great dye story, speaking of that. It didn't happen to me personally, but I was there when it happened. A friend of mine was under Schweitzer Falls when it happened. He was doing that dumb backside of water joke. You know this one. Doing the backside of water joke. And all of a sudden, coming down the water, it was red. It started turning red. And he lowers his voice and says, "In the waters of Egypt ran red with blood." And I guess somebody in the back shot, they sacrificing people up there. And he took off and pulled back into the dock going, Jerry, we got a problem. That was the lead at the time. And it turns out they had accidentally put red dye in instead of the proper mix. And it was an easy fix. But
for a couple of days it was poltergeist on the river?
No, they immediately fixed it. It was after they put in that one, it went down the waterfall, it was fine. But
were you there for the Halloween? You know that story, Patrick, were you there for? Yeah, okay. So someone had smuggled in about 30, 35 pounds of dry ice under the guise of keeping drinks cool at a cast barbecue on Halloween night and had put it on the top of Schweitzer Falls. And for about an hour or so, they had the smoke trails rolling over the top of Schweitzer Falls. It was beautiful. It was magical.
I missed that, I guess.
Chris Lambert tells the story about the... Dave Koenig on this story talks about the dishwashing stuff.
I was there for that. That was one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Yeah, I'd heard that story, but I wasn't there.
That's become urban myth, I think.
It's no myth.
I want to hear about it, yeah.
That is an absolute true story. It was his last day, and he had, I think it was 244 ounces of dishwash soap.
Yeah.
Goes to the elephant pool. Puts that in the top, and it just starts filling up, slowly but surely. And just, it gets to where...
Oh, because they cycle in that area because of the water coming out of the noses and...
And over the falls, so it just kept foaming up, and it got so high that only the top of the elephant's head could you see, the real tall ones.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like a winter wonderland. And so, like, all the little ones, they're gone. Yeah. You know, and it's trailing into the squirting elephant. You can barely see him, and it's going towards... Ganesha and the tiger. And so the lead, you know, comes out. Here comes the supervisors, you know, all three of them at the time. And they're going, oh, what are we going to do to get this done? And he said, well, get a bunch of boats and just keep running it through, you know, to dilute it.
Circulate the water.
Now it's getting worse because you keep churning up the water. And so for 2.5 hours, you know, it got skippers just laughing their asses off because they're driving through it, dragging it all through the deal. And man, that was super funny.
Singing the theme song to Car Wash.
it was beautiful.
See, it's funny. I've always heard that story told that it was at Schweitzer, that it wasn't the elephant pool.
No, so, it was the elephant pool, 100%.
That's the urban mythology has switched it around that everyone now thinks that happened on the Schweitzer side.
No. And then usually new guys, too, what we do is, you know, at the end of your first first shift, you'd send them on a deadhead towards the end of the night, and either at the top of Schweitzer or you go onto the island, and there's usually a bucket or whatever, and you drench the new guy.
Yeah.
That was always worth a laugh.
Yeah, that was pretty much gone by the time I got there. Most of the hazing and stuff was...
And then all the Don Chapman stories I'm sure you've heard over the years.
You can never tell enough Don Chapman stories, so...
That guy, it's...
I'm going to let you tell him. I'm going to run over and just see if... We're taping at an undisclosed location where skippers can sometimes randomly spawn like Pokemon.
Do you want me to go run it?
No. Oh, if you wouldn't mind, just so you can see it. Because I know everyone who's showing up, so... Yeah, take a peek. We're just going to check. We've started having monthly skipper get-togethers, which are proudly promoted on our Facebook page. This is, so far, we're a lightly attended one. We had 20 or 22 last time, by the time 8 o'clock rolled around. A lot of people came after their shifts, so. Go ahead and toss. I've heard some Don stories, but I'd rather you guys tell them, because if I tell the same stories over and over, people...
I know. I only knew of him. I never met him.
He was an ex-police chief, so that kind of starts the story with Don. And so he was just this gigantic hard ass. Unless you got on his really, really good side, and then, you know, you're in a good rotation. But I had hired in, and he was the closing lead. And it got to be about 10 o'clock on a 12 o'clock close. And, you know, I'm definitely afraid of this guy because he's just rough and gruff. And so I'm loading my gun, getting ready to pull up to start loading guests. He steps on the front of my boat, steps on the throttle, boom, we book out into the jungle. I'm looking up at the guy going, what the hell's going on? Guy didn't say anything. We get to the toucans, make the turn, go by the Bengal tiger, reaches his pocket, pulls out a smoke, lights it up. Still hasn't said anything to me. Brr, and this boat's going full throttle. So we
back,
go
back before the governors were on there, and yeah. They actually could go.
Yeah, they could go pretty fast. Yeah.
So we hit the elephant pool. Still nothing. And so we finally make the turn onto on the Nile, and he spreads his legs, unzips his pants, and just starts peeing off the front of the boat. And I'm looking at this going,
did he throttle down before?
Are you kidding me? Yeah, just a little bit.
Because if he hadn't, that would have just.
So I'm sitting there. I don't know whether to laugh, cry, whatever. And so he finishes, turns around and goes, man, I needed a pee. And that's all he said to me. And I couldn't stop laughing after that. And then I brought him some photos. Back then we were doing a bunch of local racing back in the day. And I brought him a bunch of photos of a bikini contest. And so it was probably 30, 40 pictures. You know, he's flipping through this stuff and he goes, hey, kid. Let me hold on to these for a while. And I go, you bet, Don. So after that, you know, Don and I, we
bond
hit up, yeah, bond a little bit. So.
Well, there's nothing like casual near pornography to bring men together. That's really, I think, a time-tested, you know. So what about Jacob? Now, you on training, Jungle was your first knowledge? Or
oh, no, actually, I had a fight to get Jungle. I started over at Star Tours, and, I started in the park back in 95. And I didn't get Jungle till 99. I left for a little while, then came back, and I begged for Jungle Cruise. I don't know why. I just wanted Jungle Cruise. And they said, no, we're sticking you over at Star Tours. I despise Star Tours. Then one day I got a call from Schedule, and they said, hey, we heard you wanted a Spieling Attractions. I'm like, Jungle. I got Storybook. At the time, they wanted to put men over at Storybook, and I was the sixth guy to go for Storybook. And I worked Storybook for about a year. And I wanted Jungle really bad, so I actually went and called the vice president of attractions and made a scheduled meeting with him and went in there and said, hey, I want Jungle. And he's like, well, if you want to work it, I want somebody that wants to be there. And sure enough, he scheduled me and got me over there, and that's how I got a Jungle Cruise.
Hmm. Yeah, it's funny how many people we talked to who either it was really easy for them to get Jungle at the time where no one wanted to be at Jungle, or when it started getting popular again, that's when they really had to fight for it. They really had to...
Well, you know, the funny thing was, when I went there, nobody wanted it.
Yeah.
And so I never understood quite why the...
it was so difficult?
Yeah, why it was so difficult. I mean, I talked to managers and stuff. They said, I know we're going to keep you here on the east side. And, you know, I finally went ahead to go over people's heads. And maybe it made some people mad, I don't know. But I went over there, and I was very happy to be there.
I remember, because I worked with you at Jungle when I got there in 2002.
Yeah, that was around the time I was transitioning out.
Yeah, you were right in that middle, but you had spent some time over. So I think that was right when, because I think you still had your knowledge at Storybook when I knew you.
I may have. I might have still been a lead, because I was a lead at Storybook for a very long time, and when I didn't have lead shifts, I had Jungle.
Yeah, I think that was the era in which I got to work with you.
Yeah.
It's funny how Jungle, the people who got into Jungle were either really well suited for it and they stuck around, or obviously they're people who just didn't click with.
Yeah.
But it seems like there was a propensity for them to know who they were putting over there. They were pretty good at in that era. I think that changed in the early aughts. But in the late 90s, the people who I've talked to, they were really dead on for who they were putting over in that area.
In 99, after they got rid of a lot of people that didn't want it, and they seemed to have kind of a cohesive team that wanted to be there. That was like 99, 2000, I think.
Yeah. Well, and after the narrations issues.
Yeah, after that all went away. Yeah.
So back on to the fun stories. Other than Jungle, what was your favorite attraction to work? What was the one that really, if you weren't going to get a Jungle shift, where'd you want to be of all your knowledges?
Of all my knowledges, I really, really liked Big Thunder. That was kind of my baby for a long time. And I really, really enjoyed working Matterhorn as well as Haunted Mansion. Haunted Mansion was really fun. That was back before they had cameras.
Yeah.
And so they had that position in there called Utility. All you did was... walk around the ride and make sure people were in their, you know, doom buggies, and it was a lot of fun.
I worked. That was mine too. I worked Mansion. I really during the summertime, I really tried hard to get at least one or two Mansion shifts a week so I could rest my voice.
Yeah,
and that worked out really well. Just because working Spieling, 40 hours a week, it doesn't always work real well. So
I don't think I've told this story. One of my favorite stories to tell people is a Mansion story, and it was after the cameras had gone in. I was there with a friend of mine, and the couple in back of us, he was a big, mid-six-foot football college kind of guy, and his girlfriend was pretty tall, and she was very well endowed. She was very top-heavy. And they went on the attraction, and they started fooling around and making out and doing some inappropriate things, and we'll leave it at that because I want to keep my iTunes clean rating. But some things they probably shouldn't have been doing on a Disney ride. So we're getting off, and we're on the people mover going up to the top, and I turned to my friend and I said, this ride just isn't the same ever since they put the security cameras in and they videotape everything. And she went white as a ghost, turned around, and decked the guy she was with. He went down and hit his head on the rubber, and it put him out cold, and his body was bouncing at the top of the exit of the people mover on the outside of the rail. She ran off crying, and I just sat there going, was that a bad thing I just did? I don't know. Maybe? No, probably not. So as far as the fun celebrity moments, I've got to ask, you tease a Michael Jackson story. I've told mine. Yeah, I've said mine on the podcast before. Go ahead and...
With Michael, it was that was back before they had the queue area, so it was just the rope rail, and then it was just all open. And so
back before the ride was popular, is what you're saying. Let's call it what it.
And so Chapman goes, "Hey kid, go back in the back, and we're gonna pull a boat on with a celebrity. So you're gonna take him around the jungle." And I go, "Okay, Chappie, no problem." So I go booking back there, and of course it's Michael Jackson. He's got a couple kids with him, and I think it was their parents or whatever. So I bring the boat on, and immediately the place is just gridlocked with people, just screaming his name and Michael, cameras, photos, everything. And so I take him out in the jungle, kind of doing my thing. There was it wasn't a full boat, so it's kind of hard to get laughs when you don't have a full boat. So kids are laughing every once in a while, and I get to the hippos, mm-hmm. and normally, you're supposed to, shoot it in the air, scare them away. Now, I'd pop a couple caps right in the middle of that hippo's eyes, spin the gun, jam it in the holster, and, hit the gas, go to the next scene. So I spin it around, jam it back in the holster, and I look down, and Michael's sitting right next to me. He looks up at me, and he goes, "You didn't really shoot him, did you?" And I look at him, and I look at the kids, and I look at Mike, and I go, "They're fake, Mike. Work with me." And I hit the gas, and the kids are just now rolling, laughing. He's looking at me like, I cannot believe that you just said that to me. So I get through, you know, to Trader Sam, and now I'm thinking to myself, uh-oh, I might be writing a statement.
This is not going to go well
for
me.
When this goes in. So I was going to actually hit him with, at the time, Captain EO was going, and so one of my lines as it come in, you know, okay, we're going in, or as Captain EO says, we're going in. And so that usually drew a laugh, but I left that one out because I didn't want to write a statement. So that was my Michael story.
I don't remember what episode it was in, but I was working Tiki, and Michael and his entourage were there. And after the show, with all the kids, they all left, and Michael wanted to see it again. And at the end of the show, I had to physically put myself between Michael and Jose because Michael wanted to touch the birds and pet them. So I think we're getting a lot of collateral evidence here about Michael's not necessarily being in touch with reality at all times.
I can almost guarantee that.
I got a celebrity story, too.
It's
Mansion, though. It's not, it was actually, I was working the foyer at Mansion, and they have this side gate. There's some steps to go up, and at the time, I don't know what it is now, at the time we were told no guests were allowed to go through there. And so I'm standing, all of a sudden, I see some guests coming up there, and I walk up to tell them they need to go around the front. And there's a guest relations person with them, and so I assume they were probably some sort of celebrity, but I don't know why I didn't make the connection who this person was, and you'll find out why in a minute. I just told the guest relations person that they needed to take them back through the front. She glared at me, but she did it. About 30 minutes later, I get pulled out of rotation by management and called into the office and yelled at. Apparently it was Hugh Hefner and a couple of bunnies. And he was incredibly offended that how dare I tell them to go through the front like everybody else, because he was personally invited to the theme park by Michael Eisner, and he was going to tell Michael Eisner that Jacob Caputo had treated him terribly. So he didn't know my last name, so I don't know if he ever complained or not. I got written up, and that was the end of it. But so that was my experience with you. And I asked him if I could have a copy of it because he apparently wrote a statement. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I'd like to have this, but absolutely not.
You're not legally entitled to have a copy of your statement. Is that?
That's what they said.
Strange. So
yeah.
That's a funny story.
That's pretty good.
That's a good one. I remember.
I couldn't believe I didn't make the connection who it was. He had two bunnies with him.
So anyway, no, the celebrity ones are always the interesting stories. The questions we get asked by email, all six people who've emailed us.
You got my six emails.
Yeah, your six emails. Right. Yeah. You know, it's so funny. We've hit 15,000 downloads between all of the four podcasts. Actually, probably 18 with Joey and Trevor. We have great subscriber numbers. We don't get a lot of feedback from people on the episodes, which really surprises me. So I'll plug it again. We actually really want to hear from people, and we'll read your emails on an episode probably. It's jungleCruiseCREWS@gmail.com. You can also reach us on Twitter @SkipCast. Kind of fun. The nice thing about the Twitter feed is you get to find out about all the other projects we're doing, and we'll plug all that at the end of the night. So. But no, the questions I get asked most often are celebrity stories, people who want to know about famous people because we're Americans and we bask in the religious glory of our celebrity culture. But also, favorite joke is the one that comes up a lot. I argue that that's a really unfair question because your favorite joke is the one you tell at the moment. And there are a few that people have that are outside the OG that they still hold on to, so we'll limit it. Is there a joke that either you started that you really liked or thought was funny that should stay in the script, or is there something that you did start that maybe you got years later actually still is floating around?
You know what? I haven't been on the ride, and I got to say, 15. It's been a long time since I've been on Jungle
Cruise. A number
of
years.
Yeah, for me, it's been a while too.
Yeah, so I don't know what's still floating around. Let me think for just a moment here on what would be my favorite joke or one that always killed. You might be ready.
I really had a thing going with Trader Sam. I actually, when I'd come up to him, I used to really go on and on. I had a lot of jokes with Trader Sam, and I got later told that I wasn't allowed to use most of them. I'm trying to, if I can piece it together here, let me see if I can do it. I said, you know, you know, Trader Sam is a great guy. I'd go over his house, and we'd sit down together and had to have a bowl of soup. And said, Sam, you know, your wife makes great soup. And then he turned to me and smiled and said, like only Sam can, yeah, I know, I'm sure going to miss her. Mm-hmm. Then after that, we had the baby back ribs that he had. And for dessert, you know, we had the Butterfinger and Baby Ruth.
Lady Fingers are always good. Baby Ruth's a good one.
I had there was a bunch more to it. I said sometimes we, you know, me and Sam, we'd sit down and, you know, we'd have some crackers and head cheese, and I had lots to go with that, and management didn't like those jokes.
But the funny thing is, it still astounds me. I mean, the cannibalism jokes are in the script right now.
Are they
in the approved script? And it always has. I love it because it is that little nod to, you know, the way that was thought of in the 1920s and 30s, you know, with it, those lands were filled with people who did horrible things, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I love that they're still in there, but it surprises the hell out of me that the cannibalism jokes have survived, because apparently they don't get complaints on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I ever personally got a complaint over that,
yeah.
But management would sometimes be on, you know, that little bridge right there, and you know, I remember the baby back ribs was not appreciated by one of the managers. I was told never, ever to say that. You know.
See, and now that's a stock line.
Oh, they're allowed to say that, huh?
That one I've heard more times than not. The one that I would throw in at the end, and I only took it out because it was a brand name, was, you know, for dessert, I always used to enjoy having Ben and Jerry.
Yeah, I remember
See?
That one. Yeah.
I like that. That's a fun one. But yeah, anything with a brand name you kind of had to leave out. But any of the generic food jokes, elbow
see, what
macaroni.
What I used to say to that was, Trader Sam, say, hey, you know, stick around for dessert. I got Ben and Jerry in the freezer.
Yeah.
That was,
see, that works too.
Yeah, that was, I remember that. I don't know who, it wasn't mine, but it'd been around, you know.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is it's kind of useless to take credit for it. I have a skipper who told me about how he came up with a joke. And I was talking to someone who had skippered in the 70s. Like, yeah, that joke has been around for 30 years.
I don't think anybody came up with any joke.
I think a lot of them just get, you know, there's similar concepts when you're staying in the Disney spirit and you're not making it popular culture reference. I'm going to wait out this cart that's going behind us. But, yeah, I mean, that's one of the things about Jungle. And the reason why I personally think the last 3 or 4 years it's gotten popular again. Oh, sorry, more 10 years. I forget how long it's been. It's because it's timeless.
Yeah.
I mean, it really still has held an aura of timelessness that very few other attractions at the park have been able to pull off. Subs didn't. You know, Subs didn't hold the nostalgia that it did. Very little in Tomorrowland did, for obvious reasons. But, you know, Jungle really... Pirates, up until the movies, was a joke ride. It was a ride that hardly anyone went on until the Johnny Depp thing. People forget that Pirates was not the juggernaut that it was after 2004, whatever it was, when that movie came out. Late 90s, that ride was a 5 to 10 minute walk-on.
Yeah.
And, you know, same thing with Mansion, before Nightmare Before Christmas and before, you know, some of the other things. Nightmare was one of those rides that, you know, even in on-season was a 15-20 minute wait. It never had these 45-minute to an hour lines. So things have come and gone. Jungle has always remained kind of the same animal. Pardon the animal joke.
It was always busy in the summertime.
Yeah.
You know, every many summers as I spent over there, it was always packed, certain times a day.
And when I was in a lead and I actually took jungle shifts over there, especially during the summer, I loved to spiel at night.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when they had the spotlights. I don't know whether
spotlights.
They still have them anymore.
No, they had them when I was there.
Yeah.
Where you when you took a, and it was, you weren't, had, you didn't have 10 boats on, you weren't getting pushed from behind, so you could take 20 minute trips.
Yeah.
And you could talk about what you could make them look at what you're talking about, and then that made it funny.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of stuff that, you know, wasn't probably in the spiel that we used.
Yeah, because you could take the detail and the time. There was a skipper on one of the nighttime trips who would go out and would stop the boat and for 3 minutes would shine the spotlight in a patch of the forest. And literally just be like, wait for it, I could set this joke up. Because in my day, comedy had a beginning and a middle and an end. You know, that's how it used to be. But, I mean, he would just set it up for 3 minutes and then just turn the light off and drive off. And I mean, with that length of time, it was a beautiful setup. You couldn't do that in 20 seconds because you're not sucking everyone in.
Those evenings were a lot of fun. I used to love those night shifts. And, you know, I used to do the same thing, but I'd turn my running lights off and just go through with the spotlight.
Oh, it focuses the attention.
Yeah, and I'd really have a lot of fun with that. You know, it was even, I don't even think it was particularly funny at night, but it was just a different atmosphere. Yeah,
it wasn't more funny. It just was.
You had their attention because they weren't, during the day, you got, you know, 30, 40 people on the boat, eyes are going everywhere.
Yeah.
Where when you had them at night, you had their attention.
Yeah.
So you could make them focus on what you were talking about, and that made it really funny.
Mm-hmm. You know, I did actually come up with a I just remember night trips. I remember a very funny story that happened at night. I got a boat full of Japanese tourists. Completely full of Japanese tourists. We're talking 40 Japanese tourists. And they were all speaking Japanese to each other. And, it had been a long day. I'd been there since like 8 in the morning. I was doing one of those double shifts. And so I said, you know what? I'm not going to put my effort into this. I'm going to tell them how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So I went through the entire tour. And I basically said, you get your white bread out. I told them how to make a peanut butter sandwich. And, you know, they didn't look like they were paying attention. So I just kind of drove through, pulled back in. And they all get off. One of them comes up to me and says, I like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, too, in perfect English.
Yep.
I was so embarrassed. I never did anything like that again.
I did the same thing. I talk about this on a couple other episodes.
I love that. That is so funny.
Or the two guys that get off, and they're like, hey, that guy was pretty funny. They're like dead silent the entire time, being very respectful in their eyes. I still think my best Japanese tourist story was the one from the first episode with Kaz and Benny. And Benny was teaching his boat how to ooh and ah with a Cher accent. He actually would.
Like Benny.
Yeah, go back to the first two episodes, everyone, and check out Benny and Kaz's stories as well. Back in the infancy days, we're coming up on our first year, which astounds me that I've been doing my little side project for a year. It's funny how you don't expect things to turn out to catch on. It's a lot of fun. Now, I usually ask this a lot earlier in the episode, but Jacob, how's your rehire status?
Oh, I don't think I was in any trouble when I left.
No, rehire still good?
I'm sure.
Scott, do you still have a rehire?
Yes, they haven't caught me yet, so we're still in good
That's always a good...
If I ever wanted to come back, I think I'd be okay.
Well, you know, we were talking earlier, and I'll bring this up. We've got about 5 minutes or so left on the taping time, but we were talking as we were sitting out for drinks about coming back and having the magic be changed or different. And it's really the one crazy summer thing. You really get your one...
You do.
Time that you're there, and when you leave, it's different when you come back.
Yeah.
And just the spacing of a year or two. I had three stints, one at California Adventure and then two at Disneyland. And even the spacings between the second two with the jungle knowledges was very different.
Yeah.
And the third time wasn't unpleasant. And I made some great friends, and I really loved the time that I had, but it really wasn't the same as the first time around, or the first time at jungle for me. I mean, now, you left and came back. Were you jungle knowledge when you left and came back?
No, I actually started, believe it or not, outdoor vending, and I did that for a year, and I left, and I said I'd never come. That was in 1996 when I left. I said I'd never come back, and I did.
That might be good that things are different. You come back and do something else, it's good. Things are okay.
Do you know,
I
only came back to Disney because I couldn't find a job anywhere else, and I decided, you know, I'll give Disneyland a call, and I called them, and they said, oh, we don't have any openings right now. Then a week later, they called me in for an interview. And that was in, I guess that was in 98, December of 98. Yeah. And then I stayed after that. But I think to answer your question, though, it was an interesting time in my life. You know, I was going in for college up until when I got married. And, you know, it was just kind of a fun time in my life. And I just don't know if, you know, you can't really go back to those days. You know, it was like being bachelor, just, you know, after work going out and hanging out with the guys and stuff like that. And, you know, that...
And Acapulco's.
I don't drink, but I'd still go.
Where the beer was warm and the chips were cold.
It was
quite the place.
They
tore that place down.
Tuesday karaoke nights.
Yeah.
That was... that. I spent a lot of nights over there at 2 in the morning. Yes, it was.
Yeah, or whenever particular skippers go over there, even if it wasn't karaoke night, it was karaoke night anyway.
Yeah.
Somebody was telling me I'll tell you the story off the podcast about... someone we were talking about early being a karaoke theme that in disguise. So that's a private story, so I can't tell that one. But no, there used to be, for those of you who are Disney files from Anaheim who don't know where Mimi's Cafe is right now, used to be an Acapulco restaurant, and it was the hangout for Disney employees when they got off shift.
For years.
Because at that time, there weren't guests. You didn't have guests like we have today where you'll have 60, 70, 80, 90,000 guests a day at the resort. You might have a much smaller number than that, and they wouldn't be over there having chips and salsa, so there was plenty of space. That was back when Flaky Jake's was around, and, you know, I mean, there was a lot of local restaurants where skippers would, you know, hang out. So it was an interesting time in the post shift era. So
you know, that is the one thing that I do miss before DCA came around. Kind of the smallness of how small the park was back then.
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of knew everybody that worked there.
You knew everybody, and most everybody knew, and especially costuming was kind of that came up earlier, and I didn't jump in. The costuming girls knew your sizes.
Yeah, they did.
So
yeah.
you'd walk up, and you go, hey, you didn't have to tell them what your size was. They just said, where are you going? I got to go to Big Thunder. Boom, they pull your stuff. They had it sitting there for you, and you just kind of threw them
your shifts, though. Remember, like, you would go there, and they'd say, oh, this is Monday. You're usually at Star Tours, right? Well, yeah. It was kind of a different time.
Well, that's an era where it went from, like, 10,000 people working at the resort to, like, 25.
Yeah, you know
and support staff. I mean, it really was a huge expansion of the staffing base when they started ramping up for California Adventure. I mean, it was a big bump.
There were even the activities back then. I remember, this is probably really dating myself, when Toy Story came out, the first Toy Story, they opened Lincoln Theater. And this was like right the week that they opened up in theaters. And they showed it in the Lincoln Theater for any cast member that wanted to watch it. And, you could bring one person with you, or, you know, your wife or your girlfriend or whatever.
Or your wife and your girlfriend.
Sometimes.
It's Disney after all, so.
that was a lot of fun. I don't think they do stuff like that anymore.
They used to do screenings before that when they had Videopolis.
They'd
do big screenings out there for, you know, the Disney movies when they would come out. That was way fun.
Yeah.
Well, I remember when they used to have actual concerts back, you know, with the Snow White theaters now. They actually used to bring in real bands, and I mean, yeah, they were tied to Disney.
You remember No Doubt? I mean,
absolutely.
I think they were there. They were there one time when I was working that back in '95 and '96.
Absolutely.
So,
it was definitely a different era with the entertainment. And that's, you know, since we span a huge span, I'll wrap it up on a couple questions. What is the thing that you see the biggest positive difference between when you hired on to now? And it can be jungle specific or it can be park specific. I mean, when the last time you were in the park was, Scott, but I mean, even just your time that you were there, what's the biggest shift positively that you saw in the resort?
The biggest change?
Yeah, biggest.
I think that it's transitioned to an actual resort. I mean, with the Disneyland Hotel, with Disney's California Adventure. This is a true resort now, where before it was just a kind of a standalone theme park, and you had a hotel that was
similar to Knott's Berry Farm.
Yeah.
You know?
We always used to kid, oh, we're way better than Knott's Berry Farm.
Yeah.
But when you really looked at it, we were just one theme park, and now we're an actual resort where people can come and spend, you know, a week.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest transition. From the time that I started working there until, you know, what I see now.
Just the scale of it then? Just the size of the experience?
Well, you jumped from when I hired in, there was, you know, probably in the wintertime we'd only have like 6,000 or 7,000 employees. And then the summer we'd ramp up to 10,000. But we still had time cards at Harbor House.
You
parked out.
Remember the scanning? You scanned your card and then you went and punched in and out.
Yep. So the simplicity of it back then is, you know, you had a time card and you actually filled out your time card.
Picking your paycheck up over at Harbor House. Remember that? Trailers? You go
absolutely.
In there. Yeah, every Friday. Was it Friday or Thursday?
Thursdays.
Thursdays. Yeah, you'd go in there. No direct deposit. You went and picked up your check.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. So I mean, it just made that transition. So this is a world-class resort now.
Yeah.
That's true. And then, singularly, do you have a single Disney memory that when someone sits you down and says, what's the best thing that happened to you, or what's your warm spot in your heart that you hold on to, that would be a guest interaction, something with other cast members? What is it about working here that became, what was the single thing or single event that you kind of look back and go, this is what my experience was about? I know. I ask the tough questions.
That is a tough one. You have something?
I mean, I do. I can. That's actually pretty easy for me. It's not one specific thing.
Sure.
But I was very fortunate for the 6-7 years that I spent on the West Side. I got to work with some really, really talented people, and it was just kind of a unique mix of older guys and college kids going through, and the things that a lot of the guys that I've stayed in contact with have accomplished is just simply amazing. It's just kind of that there's probably 20, 25 guys, and I don't think that you could go to work for any given company now and meet the caliber of people that I happen to be a part of during that time.
Yeah. Well, and stay in touch with. I mean, there's a couple of skipper organizations from the 90s that are still out there. There's actually a couple. There's one from the 80s that's out there where they still get together on a regular basis. I don't think you get that level of camaraderie in any job anywhere. I mean, I think that the nature of the beast is that these things are, you know, different than working at IBM or working at, you know, anywhere else that's out there.
I was really shocked with the advent of Facebook how many old skippers tracked me down.
Oh, yeah.
I was blown away by that. But, yeah, it was great, you know.
That was probably the biggest for me. And luckily for me, I you know, not that it was a bad thing, but it was a true fraternity because we didn't have girls on the West Side other than, you know, the sporadic Tiki Room or maybe Big Thunder. But it was a true fraternity, and the guys took care of guys. You know, you screwed around, you know, the guys got after you.
Yeah.
So it was a true fraternity.
I'll say you gave me some time to think. Me and my wife had our first date at Disneyland, and she had never been to Disneyland before. She was from another state, and so I still kind of look back at, you know, how Disneyland's part in my courting my wife and eventually getting married. And when we had our son, when he was really little, we were constantly taking him here. So, you know, I kind of look back, you know, now that I don't work here, we don't come here any longer, but I look back at that as just being a happy memory.
Sure.
Just, you know, I get off work, I'd call my wife up and say, hey, you know, bring Nathan down, and we'll go, you know, in a stroller, and we just walk around at Disneyland after I got off, and, you know, that's kind of a special memory that you just can't repeat something like that, you know. And, you know, other things, my wife come down, and I'd sign her in, and I'd have lunch with her, and you know, we'd go find a quiet spot, and I'd sit down and eat real quick, and then she'd go off and do something else, and I'd go back to Jungle Cruise rotation.
Oh, yeah.
So just little things like that are fun memories that you just can't, you can't replace those, you can't repeat them. You know, they just, you put them away in your memory, and you pull them out every once in a while.
Yeah, absolutely. I always like to give a little second if you want to chat about what you're doing personally, if it has any relevance, you know, with where you're at now. I know, Scott, you're a car racer, and it's a pretty big chunk of your life. You want to give a shout out to that, or to any old skippers you want to throw a shout out to? The mic's your guys' for the next 3 minutes, and then we get to go and drink.
Go ahead.
I like the drinking part, so
yeah, I'm waiting for that. That's
a little parched after our little speech here. Yeah, for most of you that have known me that are ex Jungle Cruise guys, they know that I drive race cars for Toyota, and that's kind of been the full-time gig since about 2005, and so that's where I'll be this weekend out at Fallon, Nevada. We'll tow out there 8 hours each way. So I've been very fortunate to get to do something like that. It's not a lot of people get the opportunity to go drive race cars.
Sure.
Yeah, I own my own business, Alexander & Sons Restorations. I deal and I restore World War I and World War II military equipment, mostly helmets and field gear. And I do a little consulting every once in a while with movies and stuff about uniforms and whatnot from the First and Second World War. So for all those that you knew me back in the day, always knew I liked World War I and World War II stuff and turned it into a career. So.
Well, guys, thanks again. Once again, Skipper Jacob, Skipper Scott, thanks for coming out to our palatial estates here at our undisclosed location for sitting down and talking with us. It's always nice to appreciate it. And it's every time it's a different view of what the jungle means to people. And it's I don't know if you guys haven't heard my chatting about this, and I haven't talked about it this season. The reason we did this is we wanted an oral history because there's so many great stories that we didn't want them getting lost with time. We had this, it was a discussion with David Koenig last episode, when we were actually not doing the funny ha-ha stuff, where he basically cited the same thing. There were years and decades of stories that were going to go and be lost to time, and Jungle is full, I think, of the best stories, because we were a narrative ride and we had people who had that mentality, and I have yet to meet someone who calls themselves a skipper or an ex-skipper who's not an exceptional person. Yeah. And, you know, Jungle really brought out some amazing people. So I appreciate you guys.
Before you close, I want to tell you, say just something real kind of funny. to this day, my family tells people I was a Jungle Cruise skipper. My wife oftentimes tells random people that I worked at the Jungle Cruise. Every once in a while will run into people that recognize me from 10 years ago.
Yeah.
That I drove. I was in Utah, of all places, and in Albertsons. Somebody came up to me and said, you drove me around at the Jungle Cruise, and you told funny jokes. I had no idea who this person was, so it's funny. It stays with you.
Yeah.
No.
I have someone who is supposedly sending me their family videotape that they took in 2002 of me running their trip. So
yeah,
be interesting.
Well, why that is, it's just, you know, you're always a Jungle Cruise skipper. You can't say that with any other job, you know.
Guys, once again, thanks a whole bunch. Appreciate your coming to hang out. And everyone out there in the radio adventure lands, internet adventure lands, Kungaloosh, we'll see you next time.